From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
We're having this conversation when the entire planet is going through what I call a lifequake.
Lifequake. It's a great term, isn't it? That, by the way, is Bruce Feiler. He is a six-time New York Times bestselling author. He's given two TED Talks, hosted a few primetime TV series, and his new book is called Life in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age. And here's what he means when he says lifequake.
A lifequake is a massive change that's higher on the Richter scale of consequences and has aftershocks that last for years.
And Bruce is not just in the business of coining catchy terms. He actually spent a long, long time studying what it means to go through a transition in life. It is, of course, something that we all do. And the crazy thing about it is that we're all doing it together right now. And that is about as good a time as possible for a book to come out about life in the transitions. But that's not what Bruce, of course, could have possibly anticipated. He actually started looking at what it means to go through a life transition because of a very personal transition himself.
I went through a lifequake. A few years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer as a 43-year-old new dad. I almost went bankrupt. My dad tried to take his own life. And I just was walloped by life. And I felt like there wasn't a lot of wisdom out there about how to get through a period like this. And so I thought, there must be something out there. I'm going to go talk to people. And so what ended up happening was I crisscrossed the country, collecting what became hundreds of life stories of Americans of all ages and all walks of life who lost homes, lost limbs, changed careers, got out of bad marriages, got sober. And I then got this team of people and I spent a year combing through these, modeled on the methodology used by my friend Jim Collins, who wrote Get Good to Great, trying to tease out patterns.
And the patterns that he identified are totally fascinating and couldn't possibly be more relevant to the experience that we're all having now. He had identified what it means to go through a transition, how long it even takes to go through a transition, and the multiple phases of it. And what he also identified is this really big, crazy idea. You know what? I'm just going to let him say it.
The linear life is dead. So the idea that you're going to have one job, one relationship, one home, one spirituality, one sexuality from assisted living, you know, from adolescence to assisted living is deader than it's ever been. And that's been replaced by what I call the nonlinear life. And so what the nonlinear life involves is many more twists and turns.
And this is why I wanted to talk to Bruce, because he's not just full of platitudes here. He's actually full of data and he's full of methodology. And what he came away with was this very structured understanding of what it means for us to go through a life transition and how to get to the other side. It could not be a more relevant subject for all of us right now, which I got to stress again, is so crazy. Bruce had been working on this for years, and this book of his came out just in time. So, coming up after the break, we are talking to Bruce about what we are all going through. You may know the greatest names in leadership, but do you know how they lead? How the CEO of Beyond Meat or MasterCard inspires their companies? How NFL legends like Tom Brady and Larry Fitzgerald motivate their teams? You can't really know unless you're asking the right questions. And David Novak knows how to ask them on his new podcast, How Leaders Lead with David Novak. David has been named CEO of the Year by Chief Executive and to the 100 Best Performing CEOs by Harvard Business Review. He's led global brands for more than two decades, is a New York Times bestselling author, and has established one of the largest leadership training programs for middle and high school students in the U.S., and yet he's still hungry to learn from the best leaders in the world. So on his weekly podcast, David interviews some of the most exciting leaders today about their unique style of leadership and how they lead their brands. Listen to gain the insights you need to become an inspiring leader yourself. That is How Leaders Lead with David Novak. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Again, How Leaders Lead with David Novak. All right, we're back. So let's get into Bruce's research and insights into how life transitions happen. And the first thing to understand is that life transitions happen pretty often. It's just that they happen at different scales. And he's identified this thing that he calls, and this is where we're going to start, a disruptor.
We go through one disruptor, as I call it, every 12 to 18 months, 36 in the course of our lives. That's more often than most people see a dentist. This could be something small, like getting an accident, twisting your ankle, starting a new job, or it could be huge, like losing your limbs or losing a loved one or going through a pandemic. And most of those we get through, but one in 10 becomes a massive change. That's what I call a life quake. And we go through 3 to 5 of those in the course of our lives. And I would say that the signature piece of data that allows me to answer your question is that the average length it takes to get through the transition that comes out of this life quake is 5 years. And so when you think 3 to 5 times in our lives, we go through one of these life quakes, they take 4, 5, 6 years, that's 25 years. That's half of our adult lives we are spending in transition. And so what my book does is unveil the first new model for how to navigate transitions in 50 years. And the reason that I think life is in the transitions is if we're going to spend half our lives in this state and we're just going to say, well, we just have to grit or grind or kind of meditate our way through, we are missing enormous opportunities to remake, reimagine ourselves, to turn these periods of chaos and frustration into periods of growth and renewal. And life is in the transitions was a phrase uttered by the founder of psychology 100 years ago, William James. And this idea, it's a bit been out of favor. And so I'm trying to kind of go back and say, this is something that we need to focus on as individuals, as leaders, as executives, as founders. And I've been thinking this and building this out, Jason, for 5 years. And then lo and behold, it comes out of this moment where I no longer have to persuade people anymore that the transitions are important. And now it becomes, oh my gosh, I realize that I'm in one, all my employees are one, all my family is in one, and I better learn this skill really, really quickly.
I want to zero in on a very small part of that really excellent answer that you just had there, which is that you said the transition tends to last 5 years.
Yeah.
And I could imagine a lot of people who are feeling very uncertain right now, who are going through, as everyone is, some form of transition, saying, oh God, 5 years? I have to do this for 5 years? What does it mean that a transition lasts 5 years? What is happening within that 5 years?
I'm not sure I want to be the one saying to people, yes, this feeling that you have now, it's going to take half a decade to get through. But this feeling that you have right now doesn't take half a decade to get through. It's actually the steps, the sense of agency and control, and the sense that you're doing things and making this time productive is that what takes half a year. So let's look at it this way. One of the reasons that I use the word disruptor for the small changes is that it's neutral. It's not positive and it's not negative. And the same with the word lifequake. I specifically chose it because a lot of the kind of literature on change uses stressor or catastrophe or crisis. And I think that that misses the point. In my study, for example, 53% of the life quakes that people went through were involuntary. Okay. They lost the use of their limbs. They got a diagnosis. They were fired from their job. They went bankrupt. But 47% were voluntary. People cheated on their spouse. They chose to change religions. They chose to start something new. They chose, in the context of having this conversation with entrepreneurs, they chose to leave a stable job to then found a startup. And what was interesting is that I was born in the tail end of the baby boom. And I looked at this and I thought, you know, wow, 47% of these changes are voluntary. Like, good on us. We're embracing the opportunity of the nonlinear life. But I had a lot of millennial coders on my team and they were like, whoa, 53% are involuntary. Like, that's scary. But here's the point I want to make, which answers your question. And that is this, that the life quake can be voluntary or involuntary, but the life transition that comes out of it must be voluntary. You have to lean in and choose to take the steps and go through the process. And so that's the answer. When you first get into the life quake, you feel usually one of two things, either chaotic and out of control. Like I have a 217 point to-do list, right? I have to do all of these things. Or you feel sluggish and you're in a fetal position on your bed and you are alone and you're never going to get through it. But once you decide to go in the transition, then you're saying, okay, I'm taking agency. I'm taking control. I'm going to do actual things to get through it. Then you don't feel like you're in that state of transition because you feel like you're moving forward and you're capitalizing in this moment. And that's a feeling, I will say, before we move on, that's a feeling that's very familiar to entrepreneurs because most of these ventures begin in times of chaos. As my wife, Linda Rotenberg, who started and runs the organization Endeavor that supports entrepreneurs, thousands of them all over the planet in 40 countries around the world, you know, kind of chaos is the friend of the entrepreneur. So I think that particularly in the context of what you think about every day and what's pillow talk in my house, I think that this transition is a period where if you can thrive in your personal life and in your professional life, you can find advantages in it that are going to be more long-lasting than perhaps other people.
Okay, and so this leads us really nicely into this part of his book that I was totally fascinated by and wanted to talk more about, and that was the three stages of transitions. He had identified three stages that we all go through, and he calls them the long goodbye, the messy middle, and the new beginning.
When you first enter this transition, you are looking at it and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to last forever. I don't know what to do. I'm alone. I'm isolated. I'm fearful. Kind of jumping ahead a little bit, one of the questions I asked everybody is, what's the biggest emotion that you struggled with? Fear was the number one answer. So you don't know what to do. But look at enough of them, as I have done, looking in the eyes of hundreds and hundreds of people who have been through them, and certain patterns begin to become clear. And the first is that there are three stages to these transitions. So the first one is what I call the long goodbye, during which you have to identify your emotions, you use certain rituals to tame them, and you basically your job is to say goodbye to your old self, right? To the life that is not coming back. If you think about this in the context of the pandemic, I think it was hard. When it first hit, lots of people were saying, well, we're just going to go back. Well, 6 months into it, we all began to realize we're not going back. And that's, you can, literally in the life that people are living as we're having this conversation, you can understand that that is an important part of the process, saying goodbye. That leads to what I call the messy middle. And the messy middle, broadly speaking, involves two tasks. That would be shedding certain habits or mindsets or expectations or ways of living or ways of running your company when everybody was together in the office and having meetings. You have to shed that. And when you do, that opens you up to what turns out to be a thrilling part of the process, which is astonishing acts of creativity, where you try new things and experiment. And you know, and on a personal level, this is literally singing or dancing or baking. What happened when the pandemic, like how did people get through? They sourdoughed their way through. And in a corporate, you know, or a startup setting, it's, okay, we're going to adapt. We're going to move. We're going to be nimble. We're going to try new things. And then the last stage is the new beginning, which is you finally unveil this new self and you sort of have a ritual to say, okay, we're done with that. Now we're ready for what comes next.
But here's something really interesting about the idea of what comes next. The word next, of course, implies an order to things, a natural order. One leads to two, leads to three. But in Bruce's book, when he diagrams out the three stages of transitions, he has arrows that go both ways. So the long goodbye leads to the new beginning, but the new beginning also leads to the long goodbye, and the messy middle also leads to the new beginning and to the long goodbye and the long goodbye. Anyway, you get it. And so I was wondering how that all plays into how he understands the process of the transition.
In the first century, when people talked about life transitions, we were told that they are and must be linear. The idea of transitions was invented by a German anthropologist 120 years ago named Arnold van Gennep. He invented the word, right, the phrase rites of passage, and he likened transitions to leaving one room, walking down a hallway, and then entering another room. That is completely misleading. That's not how it happens at all. It's completely nonlinear. Like, it turns out, I actually coded for this, 40% of the people have a difficult time saying goodbye. Like, that's the most difficult phase for people. Some people are good at it. I talked to a woman, Nina Collins, biracial family, lost her mother at 19, had to raise her younger brother. She's had three marriages and even more jobs. And she said, I'm good at saying goodbye. Like, I underattach to things. Like, I say goodbye to the past, and then I get stuck in the middle. The messy middle, almost half of the people say that's the most difficult phase for them. But some people are good at that, too. I talked to a consultant and business school grad named Rob Adams, who was hired to become the president of the Simon Pierce family-owned glass company in Vermont. He moved his family there from the Midwest. He starts a month after the Great Recession. Sales drop by a third in the first month. And he should have moved on, but he's like, I liked being a leader and a mentor. I just moved my family. It was a family-owned business. I tried to make it work. A year later, he's pushed out. And he said, it was hard for me. I was bad at saying goodbye. But once we got to the middle, like, I'm a consultant. I made a list. I called 20 people. I made spreadsheets. And then I moved my family to Africa. And then the new beginning, you'd think everybody would love that phase because you're done. But about 12, 15% of us are bad at that. I talked to a woman, Lisa Ludovici. She grew up in Pittsburgh in a broken family. Her mother didn't even come to her college graduation. She lived in her car. She went to work at America Online, which when it was a new company, rose after multiple reorgs to become a kind of internet ad executive of great strength and success. She logs onto a business call, a conference call one day, and here's her roommate saying, her colleague saying how sour she is. She quits on the spot. She comes to her Amex. She says, if I cut my cable and don't go out, I can survive. She's watching cable, local access TV. 2 days later, someone says, I help people. She's like, that's what I'm going to do. She goes to Santa Fe, enrolls in a life coach course. She's got her head down because she's had 3 migraines a week for 40 years. Teacher says, what are you doing? She's like, oh, don't worry. I just got a migraine. Teacher says, come with me. Puts her in a chair, hypnotizes her. Lisa's never had another migraine. She's now the country's leading medical hypnotist. And she said she was embarrassed to unveil her new self. She said, I wrote and rewrote my LinkedIn profile for 6 months before I had the courage to publish it. So the point here is there are these 3 phases. We do them out of order, but everyone turns out to be good at one and bad at another. Like their transition superpower is the one you're good at and your kryptonite, as I call it, the one you're bad at. So one of the things I try to do in life is in the transitions is walk you through the process of figuring out which one you're good at. So let's start there. Let's build up some confidence so that when we get to the one that's more challenging, you'll feel like you got a head of steam behind you.
Right. And you had said in the book that people tend to do the opposite. No, that's not true. They don't do the opposite. They do gravitate towards the thing that they're best at, the phase that they're best at. So I guess the challenge there, although you're encouraging people to seek out the thing that they're best at as a way to start, is that if you find which part of this you're good at, maybe that's the one that you just try to stay with. And what you need to do is go through the whole journey, regardless of whether you want to or not.
So what are we talking about here? What we're talking about here is the idea of a life transition. Whether it's your personal life or someone that you live with or you love or a partner or your company that may be going through a change, we're talking about transitions as a skill. You know, we have learned in the last, say, 10 years, 15 years, that certain aspects of human life, whether it's happiness or habits, can be improved. We know in the leadership space that people study communication, right? They study negotiation. Like whatever the kind of nuts and bolts of what you do in the course of your day, people spend billions in this country trying to get better at those skills. Transitions turns out to be an essential skill. It's a lifelong sport that no one's teaching us how to play. And so a lot of what I'm saying is that when you break it down, like we've learned to break down how to run a meeting, right? How to make a business plan. You can break this down. And so within, for example, these 3 phases of life transitions, I identified in the course of this year and this massive database that I built out, 7 tools for navigating a life transition. And what I found was that everybody is good at some of them naturally. That's kind of, I think, the point that you were just making, is that there are parts of this. Maybe you're good at shedding, or maybe you're good at experimenting, or maybe you're good at kind of reaching out and getting mentorship. But no one does all 7 well. Everybody wants help from something. So a lot of what I'm trying to do is say, I understand that this feels, I'm kind of rubbing my fingers together. I'll do it in front of the microphone here. I know that this feels kind of soft, but my wife likes to say of me that I have hard knowledge about soft things. And one thing I think that the pandemic has reminded us is that soft things are just a lot more important, that you cannot be a leader today without understanding this. You cannot be a leader today without understanding that your employees are at home. Some of them have children, and that's incredibly confusing to them. Some of them are living with their parents, and that's confusing to them. Like the membrane that used to divide work from life, family time from work time, this is a lot more porous. So a lot of what I'm saying here, Jason, is that these kinds of skills, we might think of them as soft, but what I'm here to remind you is that soft things are a lot more important now. As a leader, you're struggling with them. As a leader, you have to be much more sensitive to what your employees are doing, because your employees may be working from home more, may be struggling with work-life balance, may be dealing with children at home, may be living with their parents, are no longer in touch. And that the way to make these changes involves these simple steps, saying goodbye to the old way and actually going far enough to ritualize it so everybody knows that you're not going back. You know, then you're going to go through this messy middle, and it's messy because it is messy. You're going to try new things. It's experimental. It's agile. But then you're going to get through it, and you're going to say, everybody, you know what? We're through it now, and now we're ready to go through the next transition that comes along.
You had laid out, or you said that there are seven steps that you have people, and I think that walking through them all in the level of detail that would be required would take far too long, and that's why people should pick up the book and not listen to a podcast. And I'm sorry if you can hear my kids screaming in the background.
There we go. Look,
yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Oh no, this is it. Exactly. But can you offer maybe the one that you feel like is most misunderstood or most overlooked?
So I want to use two.
Sure.
The first I want to say is, I looked people in the eye and I said, what's the biggest emotion that you struggled with in this time of change? Number one answer was fear. Fear of the unknown. Can I pay the bills? What's going to happen? How can I be a leader if I have no idea how long this is going to last? The second was sadness. I liked that old way. I liked that lifestyle I used to have. I liked having my legs. I liked being with that person. I liked it when my business was clicking on all cylinders. But the third, I think, is really interesting because it surprised me the most, and that was shame. I'm ashamed. Oh, maybe I did something wrong. I wish I still had my job. I'm upset that my child has an addiction. I'm crushed because my identity was built on my company and now it's had some setbacks and I'm ashamed of what that means. So how do you deal with that? You know, one of the reasons I wanted to mention this is I was on this conference call with hundreds of entrepreneurs at Endeavor recently, and this is the one that got people kind of most crackling because it's not what we talk about. Right? It's not the model of leadership that they teach in business school, which is to be Mr. Know-it-all and you know everything, but you don't know everything anymore. So what are we going to do? So how do people deal with these things? Some people write them down. That's helpful. Some people do what I would do, which is buckle down, like stick your head down and just work your way through it. You know, stop whining and go back to work. But 80% of the people use rituals in some way. You know, and on a personal level, what they do is that they have farewell parties. They bury something in the backyard. They go to sweat lodges. I talked to a woman who had a really difficult year in Southern California, Lisa Ray Rosenberg, and she, oh man, she was a bone marrow donor to her brother, had a falling out with her mother. She went on 52 first dates and only 7 second dates. And she said, this isn't working. My biggest fear is heights. I'm going to jump out of an airplane. A year later, she was married with a child. So this can also work, you know, kind of in whatever organization where you need something that's going to say, the past is the past, guys. And we're going to do a gesture that's going to tell each of us individually and everybody together that we're not going to go back. We're not going to sit around and wait. We're going to go forward. So that's the first one I wanted to mention. If I had done three, I would have talked about creativity in the middle, because that's incredible how inventive people become. It's really inspiring. But since I only said I was going to do two, I want to go to something that you hear a lot in the world of business, that you even hear a lot in the world of social media, but I don't think that we fully understand. And that is that a life transition in a fundamental way is a narrative event. It is an act of storytelling. And when we think that we tell the stories of our lives, or the stories of our companies, or the stories of our families, we want it to be a hero and a happy ending. But what we don't want, and what we are sometimes fearful or sad or ashamed to admit, is that even fairy tales have a wolf that shows up, has a wolf or an ogre or a dragon or a downsizing or a tornado or a death or a pandemic. And that breach in the normal, far from being out of the ordinary, is what makes it a story. There is no story without conflict. There is no hero without the wolf. You cannot banish the wolf. And so the reason that I want to talk about these as a narrative event on individuals, I say that it's an autobiographical occasion, just a kind of a forgotten academic world that I'm trying to revive. Like an autobiographical occasion is when you go to the doctor for the first time, you go on a first date, or you go on a job interview, you tell your story. Well, a life transition is an autobiographical occasion for each of us individually, for the people that we love, for our families, and also for in our work lives. And what you need to do is you need to add a chapter that says, I had this setback or this difficulty, or my business went down by 80%, or my entire sector got wiped out, and I was able to get through it. And you add a chapter to that life story, which accommodates the setback and shows that you learned something and had something positive. You want to be sure that you nail the ending, as I call it in my book, that you find an upbeat, constructive thing that will allow you to move forward.
Bruce, I want to ask you one final thing and let you go. Something I've always wondered about transitions, and here you actually have done the research and probably have the data. So here it is. When I have friends who go through some kind of job transition, mostly, I remember in my earlier life, we would be talking about romantic life transitions. Now it's mostly career transitions. And they get fired, they get laid off, the company closes, they decide that they hate their job and they quit, whatever it is. I always tell, and then they come and they ask me for advice. And I one of the things I always tell them is, you know, I can't think of a single friend of mine who has gone through something like this and wasn't happier at the end of it, because they ended up with a new career or a new job that they liked more. It turns out that they weren't really into that thing that they were doing, and now they found something different. And I wonder, as you have done the research and talked to as many people as you have, if that's actually true at scale. Are people generally happier at the end of the transition, even if the transition was very hard?
If I could sum up what I learned from this entire experience in two words, the two words would be these. Transitions work. 90% of the people that I spoke to said that they got through their transition. And part of going through the transition is to find a way, not necessarily to be happier, I would quibble with that word, but to be a more meaningful event. They found meaning in it. Like a transition, a lifequake, back to the original construct I've been using here, a lifequake is a meaning vacuum. And what a life transition is a meaning restoring mechanism. It is the way that we make meaning from the difficult or the wonderful or the complicated thing, so that you do find meaning. And one of the things that happened, as you know, in this book, I talk about what I call the ABCs of meaning, the kind of building blocks of identity. The A is agency. That's things we do or make or create, kind of our work lives often. Our B is belonging, our relationships, our friendships, our family, our colleagues, our religious institutions or sports teams or whatever they might be. And C is our cause. That's something higher than ourselves, a purpose, something bigger than ourselves. I call this your me story and your we story and your the story. And what tends to happen in a life transition is that we shape shift, as I call it. We kind of recalibrate the balance of things that give us meaning. So maybe we were working too hard and we spend more time with our friends and loved ones. Or maybe we're a parent and we became an empty nester and we decide, you know what, I want to give back. Or maybe you are a cause-oriented person. You've been giving up too much. And you say, I want to do something for myself. So what happens in a transition is you rethink and kind of recalibrate. Think of a life transition as the scales of justice, but they're three, not two. You kind of move the pebbles around so that they're more in balance. And so what I want to say to people, you may have lay in bed last night worrying about something, or got up this morning with a cup of coffee, or looked at your kids and say, do I need to kind of recalibrate my relationship, or who's going to take care of the kids? Or everybody is worried about something. And what I want to say is, whatever you're worried about, either I've been there because I've been there, or I've talked to people who've been where you are frankly, a lot worse. Kind of the number one people say when they read this book is they feel so relieved because other people's transitions turned out to be a lot worse. But if you come on this journey with me and you look at these people, they're going to give you hope and inspiration. And I don't want to downplay that. But what they're actually going to do is give you practical things you can do tonight, tomorrow, something else next week, or 3 months from now, so that whatever you're struggling with, whatever transition you're in, if you come on this journey with me, you're going to find in this book things you can do, and we're going to make that transition go a little bit better and a lot more effectively. There is knowledge out there. We can defeat those wolves together.
Transitions work. That's what Bruce said, and that honestly is the thing that I'm going to carry the most away from this conversation, because that is the evidence from people on the other side of it. That is the report from the future. So when you are going through your own transitions and you're wondering what comes next, you look beyond, you look to everybody else who has gone through the same thing, and you realize there's a lot more good stuff to come. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.